right? So, like, I feel like I haven't woken up today, and I'm trying to shove coffee down my throat here to wake it up.
You know, I've got some drinks that could work for you here.
Oh, this guy's Welcome got some drinks.
Welcome to the team.
Oh, yeah, baby, that's right. We don't need energy drinks. It's week 4, Sunday night. Jets, Chiefs are on the docket right now, and the Jets are outplaying the Chiefs for the last two quarters. That's our check-in right now. Yeah, the guy next to me, Ahmed Fareed, he's here. He's wearing a red T-shirt, a red hoodie, and he's got a red 200-milligram caffeine drink on him, so he won't be able to sleep later tonight. Sorry, Fareed family.
Are you guaranteeing a victory for the Jets?
Absolutely not. I am not. I'm still shocked by this. I am. I mean, typical Chiefs, right, just to give a little some of what happened. 17-0, got the ball backed up. Referees make a horrible call and call face mask and give the Jets a safety. The face mask happened on the 1 yard line.
You gotta give them something. You can't have our game be a blowout.
I mean, it was literally like, it kind of looked like it was like Roger Goodell called. He was like, call it a safety. Swift's here. The Swifties are watching. We need to keep the ratings up.
It was not Roger Goodell. It was Rick Cordella, our new president of NBC Sports.
It was NBC was in on the fix.
Yeah,
okay, good. Hey, I'm sure he'll be glad to hear you're throwing his name out there like that.
Allegedly. It was allegedly.
Allegedly.
Rick.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But yeah. It's and then somewhere late second quarter, mid second quarter, Zach Wilson has changed and he's been outdueling Patrick Mahomes. So right now it's 20-20. There's 3:27 left in the third quarter, and the Jets are at 3rd and 11 past midfield.
Yes.
And it's getting very interesting. The whole day was interesting, though. We have lost one.
As always, we will keep you updated on a game you already know
that's
the final
right. That's
scores
what
here.
We're here for, baby. They want to hear it.
We will react in real time. We can guarantee that. I was thinking about this earlier today when I was driving in, and I think most of our podcasts early last year, I was like, this is crazy. You can't predict the NFL. And then I was thinking, how do we start today's podcast? This is crazy. You can't predict the NFL.
It's still early.
Yep. We're still trying to figure out who's who and which teams are dominant, which teams are not. So we have a few sections today. We have the big division wins section. We have the AFC South rising.
Ooh.
A little bit surprising there. We have the just finished. That would be the Sunday Night Football game. Give me the headlines. And then we have to talk about winless no more, and then my Lions, who keep playing on Thursday night, but we will keep talking about them on this Sunday night pod.
We will. I mean, we're going to give them their due respect. You play like that up in Lambeau Field.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Okay, I thought about you a lot Thursday night. That was a damn good performance right there, especially rebounding after that pick to start the game.
Yeah.
And then really didn't flinch after that. You guys kind of dominated the whole night, both sides of the ball. Very impressive. But yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. I never thought we were going to be sitting here 20-20 Jets Chiefs. I will tell you that right off the bat. And we had a few others today that certainly were shockers. Not that like one team won, but just how the games played out and some of the scores that made things really interesting.
So I was traveling back from Iowa City. We had our Big Ten Saturday night game in Iowa City, Iowa, with a big win over Michigan State. So I was seeing some of the scores. I was flying during the kickoff of these 1 o'clock games.
Right.
And so I was like, all right, let me see what the scores are here. It's like 140. And one of the ones that shocked me was how bad the Bills were beating the Dolphins.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we're going to start here with big division wins. Bills big over the Dolphins, 48-20, a team that scored 70 just last week. Still had some big offensive plays. Achan running free for Miami. And they did some things, as they will do every game this year as long as they're healthy. But this is now, Chris, after that clunker against the Jets in week one, this is three. Not just like good wins. These are three dominant performances from the Buffalo Bills.
Definitely. Three dominant performances. Defense looks amazing. Josh Allen looks smart. And like we always talk about, that proper line of reckless and aggressive. He's towing the line the right way. I mean, today, efficient as hell. 21 completions out of 25 pass attempts to throw for 320 yards. Again, it wasn't just dink and dunk. The game started out awesome. It was back and forth, right? 14-14, all of that. And then it kind of hit a little bit of a lull for a little bit. Maybe it was 21-14, and then we started to see a few punts by both teams. But really, I think the big thing was, and the shocker to me more, I don't know if this was a shocker, but I would say I did not expect the Bills to just march the ball up and down the field on the Dolphins' defense all day long. I did not. Now, the Bills are showing that they're a little different this year and that it might not be just Josh Allen and him having to work magic for them to win games. We've seen a run game here the last 3 weeks.
A little bit.
It's a little, but at least you have to defend it. They have two tight ends that are certainly popping up in the game plan a little bit. and Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid. And early on in the game, they were a part of the game plan. We're seeing James Cook every week make a few plays, whether it's run game or pass game. Gabe Davis is showing up on a consistent basis. So I think those are all the encouraging things. And, yeah, the Dolphins, I know they're still kind of finding their way here under the Vic Fangio defense. But, yeah, that was a little disappointing with how easy Buffalo made it look at times there. So that was a shocker. But Josh Allen, I think, today with that performance there kind of like, you know, injected himself back into, hey, don't forget about me and don't forget about us. We were the AFC East champions the last 2 years and we're still here. And that was kind of a reminder to everybody, because between that and the way they played there and then the defense again, Ahmed, the defense, I guess, is the shocker of the day. That they went through some moments of this football game, and it wasn't easy, but they had a plan that at least it was the first time all year you saw Tua patting the ball. People weren't open. The offense wasn't easy. You know, they were in some third and longs and stuff like that. And to me, that's the key to the Dolphins. If you can get the Dolphins in a third down, that's when they, you know, some of their motions and their play actions don't quite have the same merit to them. And Buffalo did a really good job, I think, of getting them in some situations like that. We talked about, remember on Wednesday, their zone coverages. McDermott's a master zone coverage defensive coordinator. So I think through three games, he might have had a little feel for where they like to attack. It seemed like they had a lot of people in the middle of the field to take away some of those quick play action passes they throw so often there. And you know, and then, of course, harassed Tua and caused a few turnovers, which were big. And, of course, a day like this with Josh Allen, that was really big because he had a hot hand.
Yeah, the Dolphins still almost got 400 yards of total offense. But you're right, 3 for 10 on third down, 0 for 3 on fourth down. So in those big significant downs, that Bills defense certainly stepped up.
Right, got stopped on the 4th-and-1 midfield, right? That was a big moment of the football game. Yeah, the intercept, Mostert fumbled. One time, and I'm trying to remember that right. I think it was 28-14, and then Mostert fumbled. That gave them 31-14. That was a big moment in the game. You know, then the Dolphins go down and make it 31-20, and you go, oh, here we go. They found their way again, right? And you're going, oh, they look good. That, you know, they look like a machine. Allen made a big throw to Cook down the sideline to set him up for a field goal that put it back to a 2-touchdown football game. And that from that point on, you kind of felt like, yep, Okay, they controlled the game. You know, I think they made a stop on the Dolphins one more time. They went and got a field goal, 34-20, and then Tua threw his interception. They scored a touchdown there, and the game really got out of hand, and the Bills kind of just rode that momentum home.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs with his third touchdown of the game. So,
yes,
Josh Allen is the second player in NFL history with 300 or more passing yards, 4 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown, and a perfect 158.3 passer rating in a game. Aaron Rodgers was the other.
I hope everybody realizes, like, people I know, and you know, I heard some people on TV that, like, Josh Allen's playing his way out of elite status on quarterback, and I want to go, what fucking sport are you watching? You might need to stop talking about football. Like, he's one of the most, if not the most, gifted quarterback physically in the history of football. Like, he's insane.
Yeah.
And I don't say that lightly. You know how much I like Rodgers, and Mahomes is arguably the most gifted physically quarterback I've ever seen in my life. But the things Josh Allen does on a weekly basis are absolutely incredible. And I think there are a group of people out there that take that for granted. And I think the biggest problem is the rest of the team has got to match him a little bit. And we're seeing the defense match them. I mean, their D-line right now is playing at a level that I didn't know if they were capable of. They're dominant right now. Rousseau, sacks. They did a great job getting hands up and batting balls down a few today. You know they're going to throw it quick, Miami, right? So really a great team effort. And then it was awesome, DeMar Hamlin being out there.
That was awesome.
And that was
that
a good,
was
you know,
cool.
Just good to see for the
amazing.
Good food for the soul there.
Those people that are questioning whether Josh Allen can be a good quarterback, ask them if they're thinking about the pass rusher for the Jacksonville Jaguars, if they've confused the two.
It's not that guy. He doesn't play quarterback.
He's a good defensive player. Like, you got the wrong Josh
Pete,
Allen.
Pete always says this. He goes, it's still people trying to defend their draft rankings, right? And,
for sure.
You know, I know I'm probably guilty of doing that to a degree, too. But at some point, you just got to take it for what it is. He's one of the best players in the sport. He showed that today. He probably injects himself in the early season MVP conversation But what a win by Buffalo. And Buffalo reminded us that they are, and I was wrong. I will say that. I was wrong. I know I'm one of those that thought maybe this is going to be their Bills kind of fall off.
We felt good after week one.
The Bills after 4 weeks,
yeah.
They're definitely one of the four or five best teams in the league. Yeah. That's for sure. And with him at quarterback, they're dangerous as hell.
All right, let's dig in a little bit more on Josh Allen here. It is time for Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS. And we just started this pod, and it's already time for this. Isn't that crazy? It seems like it's that time already.
We're legit.
Let's take a look at the passing chart for Josh Allen here. Next Gen Stats, spreading it out. Not a whole lot super, super deep. This is all of his 25 here, but a couple there, 20 or longer.
I think it's encouraging.
Yeah.
Right? We usually, like, right, in years past, you'd see things sprayed down the field because he just couldn't help it. Like, I got to throw it. This guy might be open. Let me launch it. Let me run outside the pocket and try to get 70 yards right here. I think we're seeing a maturation of a guy, and a guy that realized, hey, last year he went off the rails a little bit. He went off the rails week one, but got back to the drawing board here, heard the criticism, they took it in, and they're kind of got a little chip on their shoulder. They kind of were flying under the radar going into the year. You know, people like me disrespected them and some other people too, and they're kind of showing their ass right now and really playing some really good football.
So Josh Allen, according to Next Gen Stats, completed a career high 14.2% of his passes over expected. So they figure out what you should have for a completion percentage.
Right.
And then he was 14% over that. And this is interesting, too. The first 3 weeks when he was targeting vertical routes, he was 7 of 20 for 127 yards, 2 touchdowns, but 4 interceptions. Week 4, today, 6 of 8, 153 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks.
Yeah. I mean, hey, week 2, they couldn't get big plays against the Raiders. He was patient and smart in that game. Washington, there was only a handful to be had. He did have one reckless play, but still played really well and made some amazing plays. He threw an interception in that game, right? He threw 3 interceptions in week one in week 3, and now we're sitting here. Either way, though, he's righted the ship and playing awesome football along with Stephon Diggs. Diggs not only playing system football the right way, but making one-on-one remarkable plays, you know, like the touchdown that gave them 28. I mean, he back shoulder throw, catches it, breaks a tackle, makes somebody miss, breaks another tackle, runs up the field for a touchdown. He's on his game. And then, of course, in the red zone, Allen has found his magic again, too, with making some plays there. Bills are going to be tough. If they can have one more answer than Stephon Diggs, like we always talk about, just one more, and their defense can play the way it's playing right now, they're going to be in this to the very end, and I mean like to the very end. They're going to be tough to beat with the way they look right now.
Much to your chagrin, it could be Gabe Davis. He did have 3 catches.
I hope so. It's not against my chagrin.
He had 61
yards. You know
yards.
Me. It's not against my chagrin. I get sick of it, and I push back against it when I go, wait, we saw a divisional game 2 years ago, and now we've seen 20 games in between it, and it didn't work, and we're still talking like he's a superstar.
Yeah.
And that's where I was just trying to talk sense into it.
Yeah.
I hope Davis shoves this where the sun don't shine up on me here. You know I'm rooting for them, and I love Josh Allen and the Bills and want them to do good.
It's not against your chagrin.
No,
it's for your chagrin.
It is for my chagrin,
That's the next T-shirt, for my chagrin. I love it. All right, that was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS. No longer time for that. We did it. Well done there, Chris. All right, we got
Chiefs are moving the ball. It's 2020, 11:48.
Fourth quarter.
Right, it's not easy.
Mahomes
magic. It's been a few
good
Mahomes throws. There have been a few runs by Pacheco, but they're slowly marching the ball down here with 11:39 left in the fourth.
Your guarantee of a Jets victory is not looking so good right now. All right, we'll keep you updated on that game that's already over. Eagles, they get an overtime win against the Washington Commanders at home. This was a fun game to watch.
It was.
Sam Howell made some throws and
Definitely.
Made some big key throws, third down, fourth down, late in the game. My big beef, and you know what that's going to be.
Oh, boy.
Ron Rivera.
I'm a little with you here.
What are you doing? You're on the road against the Eagles.
Right. I think keep saying it. You're right.
You have a chance.
You're not
the
better team.
You're not the better. You don't want to go to overtime. And Morgan made a great point. And I was talking about this with Pete and Morgan beforehand. She was like, this is not hockey. You don't get a point for going to overtime.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's a great call because I think a lot of coaches back in the day thought like it was a victory somehow to force overtime. It's not. You still have to win in overtime. And I know Ron Rivera said after the game his offense was tired, which would lead me to believe that defense was probably already also tired. But he wanted to just play. So he had his reasons.
Yeah.
But I was
against it. It wasn't egregiously horrible, right?
I think it was.
Okay. All right.
Go for it right there.
I'm with you there. And Pete can tell you when I was watching it, before they even drove down to score the touchdown, I was like, yeah, go for two here, right? The general rule there in the situation like that is if you're the lesser team and you're on the road, You go for the win right there. Now, he's probably going, wait, we played toe-to-toe with them all day. Our defense has been a handful. And maybe that's why he took the chance. But, no, I don't agree with it. I don't. And it proved out to why we don't agree with it. Their great defense made a three-and-out stop, right, to start overtime. And then Jalen Hurts and company just smashed it down their throat and got what they needed and got the field goal to win the game. Because, of course, they got a great field goal kicker in Elliott, if not the best. I mean, he's as clutch as hell. I think the thing, okay, I mean, you said it. The Washington did some good things.
They did.
Right? Howell, they're fun to watch. They're aggressive. You know, they had a pretty good offensive game plan. I was surprised how Washington, like, held up front better than I expected. The thing I worried about all week was, like, man, Philly might run over this crew, and he might be getting hit, like, nonstop. Now, he got hit, and he was under some pressure, no doubt about it. But it wasn't just a pass rush. Like, they had a blitz. Like, Nicholas Morrow, their linebacker, he got three sacks. I think that kind of just tells you that they had to send some extra guys finally to get home and get after Howell. But it was encouraging nonetheless. And I do think Washington, as we sit here 4 weeks, I feel pretty good to go on. I think they got their quarterback here. You know, he's tough, gritty. He's a playmaker. He's aggressive decision maker, maybe a little too aggressive at times. So that was all good. But the Eagles are just damn good. They are. They didn't play their best game on defense, okay? Offensively, there was definitely some sluggishness. And Washington's defense, of course, is talented, like we talked about. It's four first-rounders on the defensive line. It's a first-rounder at middle linebacker. It's another first-rounder at corner. I mean, they're good there. And where they gave them problems, to me, Ahmed, it looked like they played some defenses just go, we're going to stop the run. And we're going to stop, like, the over-the-middle 8 and 10-yard passes. And it took Philly a little while to figure out what to do. But I think, like, what is it, late second quarter maybe? It was early third quarter. They started to go, wait, we can't let them play us like this. We got to start attacking them. And that, to me, is where Jalen Hurts was awesome in the second half. Because they called some aggressive down-the-field throws. They were like, what? Are you going to leave A.J. Brown one-on-one here like this often? And he started to hit big plays to A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. They double-moved Washington a few times. One was just a straight double move. Another was like a fake screen double move. And they took advantage of Washington's over-aggressiveness and used it against them and made big plays. And that's what's tough about the Eagles. They have a yin for every yang.
Yeah.
And they're special that way, not only with their talent, but their coaching. And then Hurts, he's a good deep ball thrower, and he'll hang in the pocket and put it up in the air for those guys to go get it, and they got it today.
I think you're right. I think some people probably would look at the score and say, oh, what a highly disappointing game for the Eagles to have to go to overtime at home to beat the Commanders. But I think there were a lot of things that were so good. I mean, 175 yards for A.J. Brown and those two touchdowns. 527 wants to know,
yeah,
are the Eagles beatable after the coaching drain, or are the Commanders legit?
I think the Eagles are not playing their best yet. They're still not dominant like we saw last year. But the sign of a good team is that even though you're not playing your best, you still find ways to win a football game, and that's what they're doing. All right, so, you know, and they've had moments of dominant where you're just like, ooh, they're close. But I think more, you know, to our question, who was that?
527.
At 527. I think that Washington is really legit in some areas. Again, their three receivers and their tight end and their two running backs and all of that. Like, I'd put that up there against anybody. I'm not saying it's the best, but I'd go, they're like in a pretty top-tier class. And then you talk about the D-line, like we're talking about, and some young guys in the secondary, and you start to go, well, shit, yeah, they got talent. They're just young. They're figuring it out, and they got a young quarterback. But I think that it's more Washington's better or more talented than maybe the general public has been led to believe, and the Eagles aren't playing their best ball. But, you know, I just feel like the Eagles, it's only a matter of time before they get it going here.
Agreed. 4-0 for the Eagles. They're 4-0 to start the year for the second straight season. The Buccaneers are 3-1. They get a division win. They go into New Orleans, beat the Saints. 26-9 was the final score. There were two quarterbacks when watching the highlights and watching the games live that I really enjoyed watching today.
Yeah, okay.
It was Justin Fields was one.
Yeah.
I thought he looked awesome.
He was his best game as a pro.
We'll get to him.
Yep.
And Baker Mayfield was the other.
Yeah.
I thought he looked really, really good.
Made some plays, right? I mean, he did. Baker's got a great blend of, like, knowing to run the offense and then, oh, you need a little backyard splash right here? I'll get it done, you know? And, of course, he's aggressive and he's a playmaker and he brings toughness and grittiness to their football team. Their defense is a pain in the ass. We saw it a little last week against the Eagles on Monday night. It wasn't like the Eagles' offense just steamrolled them. I mean, I know they had their moments, but, you know, that Buccaneers defense held strong in the early parts of the football game. So there's that. And then, yeah, with Baker, you know, ugly, good, long touchdown drive to give them 7 points. They drive down again, and he throws a bad interception that, like, the Saints caught on, like, their own 2 or 3 yard line. But then, like, 2 or 3 plays later, they fumbled the ball going up the middle. With the fullback up the middle.
Yeah.
That gave him the short field. Baker made a nice little touchdown throw. That might have been, actually, I'm thinking of the nice touchdown throw in the first touchdown drive. The second one was easy. But got up 14-3. And then they kind of just leaned on their defense because, as we've kind of talked about for 4 weeks now, right, the Saints' offense is a little bit like the Bengals' offense. It's too bullshit West Coasty. I'm sorry. It is. I look at the replays and go, yeah, I saw Montana and Rice running that in 88. I saw Montana and Rice running in 89. I ran it the first day of practice in 2002. Like, everybody runs these plays 100 million times in the offseason, and they're their bread and butter plays. And then you wonder, like, how do they have that many receivers? And it's like, our top receivers, 4 catches for 53 yards? Alvin Kamara catches it 13 times for 33 yards?
14 targets, 13 catches, 30. You're right, 33 yards so for a 2.5 average.
It's laughable.
That's crazy.
I know. And that's where I'm just like, so that's the disappointing thing. Now, this Bucs team's tough and all that, but this is like, just, they have more talent than what they're doing here. And then that, to me, of course, is falling back on, you know, the coach, the scheme, and they got to find a way to make some explosive plays in this offense.
Yeah, and Alvin Kamara had a catch of 10 yards in there, too. So the rest of,
so the rest of them were nothing behind the line of scrimmage and stuff like that. That's
Derek
exactly
Carr,
right.
Derek Carr probably was still feeling it. I can't believe he played in this game. Sprained AC joint.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't know the severity.
The Jets just fumbled the snap. They were kind of driving, and I think they snapped it low. And it fell off of Wilson's in the shotgun. It hit off his foot and rolled forward, and the freaking Chiefs picked it up.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean
seven
to interrupt
and a half
you.
To go. 7.5 to go there. All right, so what do we think about the Buccaneers and this division?
Yeah.
Right, too. So I picked the Saints to win this division. I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone really picked the Buccaneers. I think most people thought they would be last in this division. That's not even that strong of a division. Well, like, what do we think about them right now?
I think the D, like we talked about, has some parts on it where you go, they can be tough. And, of course, Todd Bowles is pretty creative on that side of the ball, so they're not going anywhere. They're 15th in football right now, total defense. Probably better than that when you don't have to play the Eagles in week 3, right? That'll make your stat line look a little worse. But I think that, right? And then, you know, like you saw today, if they, like, we know Mike Evans, and I think he got a little banged up today. He played early on and did some good things, but then came out of the game. But when they, you know, can get somebody other than Evans to make a few plays, whether that's Chris Godwin or the Tompkins kid who made a few good plays and some big moments here today, you know, they can be dangerous. Baker's a playmaker. So, they're one of those teams that's, oh, it might be an underwhelming drive. It might be another underwhelming drive. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, 5 plays, 80 yards. Baker made a few big throws. Evans caught a catch. Whoa, okay. You know, so I think they're going to be – I'm not ready to sit here and go playoffs for them, but do I think with the size and creativity of their defense and some of those guys they got in the secondary, and then if Baker and company can just be good, they don't have to be great, and I mean by that, just make a few plays, don't fuck the game up and turn the ball over, that we're going to be sitting here in December going, if the Bucs win the last 3, they might get in. Like, I think they're like kind of one of those teams. They're fringish. Especially in that division. They can beat the Panthers twice. They can beat the Falcons twice.
Agreed.
You know, now it could go the other way, too, a little bit. But They certainly are not like outclassed by anybody in their division, as we saw today. We thought the Saints were going to be the best team in the division, and you know they kind of controlled that football game.
So Pete has put this in here. And by the way, he is excited because he has been saying since the beginning of the offseason that this is the Baker Mayfield comeback season. He's been saying that to our gambling expert, Jay Croucher, all year long. So he's pumped. And he notes in our rundown, that is the fewest receiving yards by a player with 13 catches in a game entering today, so before today, was Bucks running back James Wilder back in 1985. He had 13 catches for 71 yards. That was the previous low yardage total.
That's insane.
With a guy with 13 catches, and Kamara today goes 13 for 33 yards.
And that just tells you about their offense. They're not blocking. They're not tough enough up front. The run game and the pass protection. So that's an issue. Derek Carr got, you know, harassed a little bit today. And the other one I want to tell you about is Antoine Winfield was phenomenal today.
We got to mention him.
He was phenomenal. Sacks, forced fumbles, right? Made a big breakup down the field one time on a post route where the Saints did have a chance for a big play.
Yep.
He really popped. I mean, I don't know all in capacity what he did, but I know I looked up like four or five different times today and I was like, shit, Antoine Winfield. And then I have a NFL borderline Hall of Fame safety in the room with me and Devin McCourty was going, damn, Antoine Winfield's fucking everywhere. So that confirmed what I was watching, and it was a good big win for the Bucks. Big bounce back win, 3-1 after losing like that at home on Monday night to the Eagles.
Lead the NFC South now with that 3-1 record. The other three NFC South teams did lose today. For the Bucks, it's the first time they beat the Saints in three consecutive games in franchise history.
Wow.
So everything going well for them. 3-1. The Baltimore Ravens, also 3-1. They get a division win. They beat the Cleveland Browns without Deshaun Watson. DTR getting his first career start against the Ravens of all teams. That's the first thing I thought of. A rookie getting his first start against the Ravens, the one team that Chris Sims, you don't want to see
on the other
sideline.
I actually said it in the pregame show tonight. I actually said it because I always go. I mean, it's the worst.
Yeah.
You don't want to play the Ravens first anything. Like, seriously. Like, I had to play them in the first game of 2006. It was my fourth year of my NFL season, and I was like, fuck, the fucking Ravens. And, of course, I threw three picks, and one was a pick six, and they whooped my ass.
That's what DTR did today, three picks.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the club.
And they whooped their rears, 28-3, the final score. Like, one of these games where, like, nothing that the Ravens did offensively was that awesome.
No,
I mean,
They ran the ball okay, right?
Yeah. They ran the ball well. But
ran the ball well, and Lamar made some big moment throws.
Okay.
That's how I would kind of assess the game. And he was efficient. They played the game the right way. You know, good for them looking at the game going, hey, we're playing the Browns with DTR. Like, we don't need to, like, have magical plays or fight for extra yards and break the seven tackle on a four-yard gain, right? So they did that the right way. You know, DTR, he looked young and inexperienced in this game. He throws a bad interception to start the game. Stevens does a great job, gets up, makes the big return. That sets up a one-play, 10-yard drive for the Baltimore Ravens. So they're up 7-0, you know, as you're still getting warmed up. They kind of hung around for a little. But I will say, like, I was a little surprised with Baltimore and how they moved the ball on Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland came in as, if not the hottest defense in the game, the most dominant defense we saw in football the first 3 weeks. So that was a little shocking, right? And you kind of said it like, holy shit, Mahomes just had a 3rd and 23 and he scrambled for the first down. And they're going to have defensive holding or pass interference. So that might – he had all day to throw and danced and got it. All right, so back to the other game though, okay? This is what happens. Sunday night podcast, and there's games to watch. But, yes, it was on Cleveland today, their D to show up in a big way and go, wait, we got a rookie quarterback, right? It's a big buzzkill. We don't have Deshaun Watson. We just lost Nick Chubb 2 weeks ago. And to me, the backbreaker was the 8-play, 93-yard drive. They were kind of playing the field position game. It was 7-3 still, right? And that's where they broke some big runs, all right? And then he had a big pass and then a big pass to Andrews for the touchdown. That was the big drive right there. He had a big – and that kind of made the game where you felt like, man, 14-3 for the Cleveland Browns, and you know, an offense that's kind of been spotty and a young quarterback, that's going to be trouble for them to make it happen. And then the Ravens put one more good drive together before the half was over, right? And that kind of ended the football game where you felt like Cleveland's got no chance.
It was like slow, methodical for
it
the
was.
Baltimore
exactly
Ravens.
Right.
Efficient. Once they got into the red zone, they were 4-for-4, and so they scored every time they were down there. Put the ball in the end zone. So, yeah, 28-3, dominant victory. A division win for the Baltimore Ravens, who are now 3-1.
Ravens are, if they can get healthy, right, there's still no Marlon Humphrey. There's still no Marcus Williams, I believe, okay? Right, I mean, maybe double check that. Maybe Marcus Williams did play, but maybe you could double check that for me, Pete. You know, of course, no Odell, no Rashad Bateman. Right, Ronnie Stanley still hurt, so watch out for the Ravens. I don't think we've seen. Yeah, Marcus Williams did not play. I'm being confirmed there. So yeah, watch out for them because they're not seeing them at their full strength best yet, and they're another team that's just finding a way to win 3-1, and I think they're only going to get better.
Baltimore Ravens first place in the AFC North. The Browns, Steelers, and Bengals all lost today, so very similar to the last division we were just talking about. How about the Chargers beat the Raiders 24-17? And this is like one of the more Chargers victories, I think, that you can have out there because Khalil Mack goes off, six sacks, is tied for the second most in a game in NFL history behind Derek Thomas. So he dominates out there. There are some bad turnovers by the Raiders, but somehow the Chargers still only win by a touchdown. But it is a win.
Yes, it is a win. I don't think, like, you feel great about the Chargers yet, right?
Yeah.
You know, like you said, now the thing that won them the football game is they had two strip sacks and two consecutive drives on Aiden O'Connell. And that's what spotted them the 24-7 lead. So that was really the big moments of the football game. And I think who was it? Did Khalil Mack force both fumbles too? I think he did, if I remember correctly. So he had six sacks, and I believe he had two forced fumbles
to go along with that. He had a pass defense too, if you want to throw that in there.
I mean, like, what a day. And like, I didn't even see, like, Mahomes just threw the dumbest interception ever. I think they're going to call pass interference on the Jets. I didn't even see, like, him dominating, like, around the edge, like, speed pass rush. It felt like he just walked tackles back into the quarterback, and he was like, oh, I'm taking the tackle and the quarterback sack. I mean, it was overpowering that way. They got the win. They should have gotten the win. But it was underwhelming on the offensive side of the ball. The Chargers struggled on the offensive side of the ball today. They really never got anything going. Herbert never really looked comfortable. You never got the sense that they had a feel or a rhythm for the Raiders' defense. And they didn't score any points in the second half. I mean, they went in 24-7 and two touchdowns off of short fields and really never got it going that way. But they were fortunate that, they got a young quarterback on the Raiders' side there and he made some mistakes. And then they're just, like, not good enough yet across the table. Like, Josh Jacobs popped up today. But the offense is still, to me, a little bit too Davante Adams-centric. And that's where, we got to get Jacoby Myers and company involved in that offense a little bit more on a consistent basis that way for them to be successful.
Yeah, Adams got hurt early in this game. Did he play?
He came back but he was banged up. There was definite issues.
Okay.
Here, Matt, I'm just going to talk about the interception here. Okay, it was 3rd and 23.
Yes.
The Jets are going crazy that pass interference is called. Sauce Gardner grabbed the receiver 7 times in a 10-yard span. I don't know what they're angry about.
That's probably pass interference.
It was defensive holding.
Defensive holding. Yes, okay.
And that's why they got the first down.
Okay, all right. We'll keep you updated
I want to hit on the Chargers?
Yes. Because how have you not talked about this yet?
Yes.
I mean, at the end of the game.
Yes.
Fourth and one, Brandon Staley.
Right.
From their own 34.
Right.
They did run for 155 yards. So your complaint last time when they did something similar was that they really haven't run the ball successfully all game.
Right.
They did run a little more successfully. Some of that was Justin Herbert.
One was one play to start the game. They started the game with a 51-yard run.
With Davis, yeah.
Right? So it's a little misleading on how they dominated the line of scrimmage that way.
Okay.
But still, they did run it, to your point. I don't want to totally take that away. And they tried the tush push or whatever the hell we're all calling it now. And I don't know, how many teams did we see get stopped on that today? When are people going to start to realize it's the Eagles' offensive line that's unstoppable? It's not this play. I saw Mac Jones not get it. I saw Herbert not get it. there was like two or three other teams that also did not get it today. So, but yeah, they go for it right there. You know I don't love it. I mean, one, it's a rookie quarterback, okay?
Exactly, and you knew he was going to throw the interception to Asante Samuel.
You've got six sacks on him already.
Yeah.
I would have made him go the long distance, long part of the field to score, but whatever. They didn't, and thankfully for Brandon Staley, the defense and bailed him out. And Asante Samuel, and really, I'll give Brandon Staley credit too. It looked like they had a good feel for the play that was coming. They ran the old sprint right option, right? It's like Joe Montana, Dwight Clark, right? So they got a guy in the flat. They got a guy who kind of rubs off of him, and then he'll be in the back of the end zone. But they did a good job and switched it off. Like, they knew it was coming. So the guy that was covering the outside guy, once his guy went in, he waited for the inside guy to come to him, and they switched it, right? And Aiden O'Connell wasn't expecting that. He throws it right into Asante Samuel's chest, interception, and that was game over. So good win for the Chargers.
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about them yet, though. It's so all over the place. But still, they got the win, and give them credit for that.
They're 2-2 now on the season, right? Are the L.A. Chargers. Let's go to our next section, which is called AFC South Rising. Some good performances, some wins for the AFC South. We'll start out in London. The Jacksonville Jaguars beat the struggling Atlanta Falcons. Final score in that one was 23-7. Did you see the Fun Day Sunday ESPN Toy Story
I watched broadcast? It for a second, and yeah. Then motherfucked my kid for making me turn it over to watch that shit for a second, and then I went back to the regular game.
You weren't about it.
I mean, I missed a touchdown. I missed the first touchdown pass, and then had to go back to ESPN.
Wasn't it cool seeing Woody do the touchdown, though, instead?
It was a bunch of things on the field imitating football. I don't know what it was, okay? I just want to watch the damn game. My son was like, turn it over. I want to see the Toy Story. So I turned it over, and they were doing all this stuff and whatever. And I was like, was that a touchdown? Like, did that just happen in real life? Yeah. And I turned it back.
Here it is right here. We're watching it. If you're watching on Peacock or YouTube, look at Bijan Robinson, like, juke that guy out of his little toy
cleats.
That
was a nice play today. I know that play right there. I'm all for all this stuff. I'm all for growing the game, making it fun for kids, getting them excited.
Get it out of your living room.
It just ain't in my living room. Exactly right. Get off my lawn with that crap, okay? That's no disrespect to Toy Story. That's a great idea. I'm just having fun.
I think it's fun. I think it'll be really cool once you start putting that in VR and, like, you are Trevor Lawrence or Bijan Robinson or something like that. I can see that being the next step of that. But anyway, let's get away from that because it's making Chris
angry. Let's talk about the game.
Thinking about it again. Josh Allen, 3 sacks in the game for the second time this season.
Isn't that crazy?
That's the people that say Josh Allen's no longer an elite quarterback. He's an elite defensive end,
pass rusher.
Yeah, for sure. So good game for Josh Allen. Really poor performance from the Falcons offense again. It's just like, outside of Bijan Robinson, there is not much to look at.
Their defense is a handful. I mean, like you saw today, nothing was easy for the Jaguars. It was not. I mean, but it's just the repeated struggles, like you're saying, of that Falcons. It's hard to win the way they play in 2023 NFL, where you just go, we have to rely on the run game and our defense to win the football game, you know, quarter after quarter after quarter. And yes, I would think that this week starts a conversation in their building about whether they should go to Taylor Heinicke. I would think this is the week. I honestly thought at halftime, right, he threw the pick six to Darius Williams. He threw another interception down the middle the very next play, which was bad. Now, that didn't cost. The Jaguars ended up going for it on 4th-and-1 instead of going up 20-0. They tried to go for it, and it stayed at 17-0 and got stopped, which, you know, I didn't like that. But I thought at halftime I was like, I got to get in the car and go to work here. But I think when I get to work, I'm going to see Taylor Heinicke as the starting quarterback. I didn't. I give them credit for staying with it, seeing if the guy could play through it and fight through it all. But they had one drive the whole game. It's just hard that way. And as you see, the Jaguars, I mean, they don't got it clicking on the offensive side of the ball. But like I said last week, I think it's close, right? We talked about that in the Wednesday podcast. I do think it's close. I do think Trevor's seeing the field well and throwing the ball well. And their defense has some studs across the board everywhere. So, yeah, I mean, it was a good win for the Jaguars. They're 2-2. I still believe in them, and I still think they're the most talented team in the AFC South. I do, even though that division's better than what I gave it credit for.
Yeah, I think so, too. Jacksonville does snap that two-game losing streak. Ritter now drops to 0-4 away from home. He's 4-0 at home. So you play Heineke on the road, you play Ritter at home.
It's easy.
We've got to figure it out. Jacksonville.
That's interesting. That's funny.
5-5 are the Jaguars all time in London. They play there again.
They're staying there
next week.
And they got the Bills coming?
The Bills are coming.
Josh Allen versus Josh Allen?
You're right.
There we go. It's the theme so far.
It's the Spider-Man thing. They look at
London.
Each other. In London. Wow. Look at that. So big win for the Jaguars. Yeah, 2-2, as I mentioned. Big win for the Houston Texans. They are for real. Our guy D'Amico Ryan's over there, 30-6 over the Steelers. And C.J. Stroud, let's just remind everyone, your number one quarterback.
Thank you.
And I did notice that when you were effusive in your praise of him on the podcast that we did last week, I did notice that started to percolate throughout the Twitterverse and throughout the internet and throughout NFL TV. You're a thought leader, Chris, because everyone was singing his praises after what
I don't know
about.
How you can't be blown away by what we're seeing from C.J. Stroud. I mean, it's pretty high-level quarterback stuff. It really is. And I've seen every week, and of course I haven't watched the film from this game yet or anything, but, you could tell they trust him and they continue to expand and put more ideas and plays on the plate for him. But yeah, one, I'm amazed by the physical ability. I think that's where it starts. I mean, just that the quickness in his release, how effortless he is in throwing the football, no matter where it is, and, sneaky arm power, too, to where you're like, ooh, man, that ball got down the field in a hurry. It looked like he didn't even try to do it. So, and that's because his mechanics are flawless. So because of that, there's no move, crazy wasted moving parts or anything like that. But I'm impressed with the Texans altogether. One, their defense has the right personnel for their scheme. They have a fast front seven like we've talked about. They play zone on the back end. They harass Kenny Pickett and company all day. They keep a lot of 7 and 8 man people by the line of scrimmage. So the run game, wasn't a big thing for the Steelers. They tried to stay consistent with it, but kind of got in a hole and then had to get into a passing game. And as we know, their passing game's a little underwhelming. And it struggled again today. It did. And slowly but surely, the Texans kind of just wore them down. And between their defense and Stroud making big plays, 16 completions for 306 yards. That just, to me, says it all.
And then you had 15 completions for Kenny Pickett for 114 yards.
Well, there you go. So who's putting pressure on who there, right? The Steelers a little bit have the problem of, Mahomes just scrambled to end the game, I think, here.
He's over.
Doing a little shoulder shimmy.
He did. I think he was doing that for Taylor Swift, it, well,
maybe.
Think, right?
It was,
is that
it
how
was
she ends
one of his lesser games he's ever played. Yeah, I will
he shook
say
it
that.
Off. He shook it off, as Pete
he
says.
He shook it off. That's what he was
is
doing.
That what he was doing?
Yeah. I think he was shaking it up and made a nice run.
He shook off his bad game. That's okay.
Yeah.
But we'll get to our analysis of that game
we
here
will.
In a second.
But either way, yeah, that speaks to what you're talking about or what we're talking about. They don't back you off enough. There's nothing that scares you. The offense is not creative enough, right? I saw one shot they took down the field to Calvin Austin. I believe it ended up being an interception, if I remember correctly. It was on that play. The Texans, here's the thing. The defensive personnel fits the scheme, like I said. When you Malik Collins and Rankins and then the two edge rushers, Tuo Tuo and the other middle linebacker from Alabama that I always blank out, they fly around. Right, you got a guy in Petrie, he's a good secondary player in that end, right? And they're a team that doesn't play a lot of man-to-man, so they zone off, they're smart, they get after the quarterback a little bit. But then on the offensive side of the ball, with the way Stroud's playing, and then Slovic, the offensive coordinator, they run the ball and they know how to tie their plays together. Yeah. Oh, here's a run play that looks like this. Here's a run play that kind of looks like that. Oh, here's the play action play that kind of looked like that. Oh, here's the run play that you saw before. Oh, we gave it to somebody else or it's a reverse around the edge, whatever. They're good at that. They really are. And I give them credit for that. And I give them credit for trusting C.J. Stroud. He's obviously earned that and he's playing awesome.
Pete says that Christian Harris.
Christian
is the
Harris.
Guy.
Damn it!
What
do
we
got
to do? What do we got to do to make you remember Christian?
I don't know. You'd think it's only half my name there. I think you'd think I could remember that one.
We'll tape it to the desk. You may have read it if you're watching on Peacock or YouTube that Stroud's 1,212 passing yards are the second most ever by a quarterback in his first four career starts. Cam Newton had just a few more, 1,386. James Lennox 19 wants to know.
Yeah, let me hear it.
Chris, at the beginning of the season, you said the Texans were the only team in the AFC who couldn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You're still feeling that way?
No, they're making me a little nervous. They are.
You didn't say you're going to kiss feet.
Yeah, no,
or anything
that.
Like that.
But they're, I didn't give them credit for as good as they are. I didn't expect C.J. Stroud to hit the ground running the way he is. I worried about their weapons in the passing game. And Nico Collins is starting to show himself like he's a legit number one and like the perfect mix with a guy like Stroud, who's a pinpoint thrower. He's a big target. You know, I think he's got deceptive speed, so he can beat you down the field. But he's one of those guys we talk about a lot, too, where it's like even if he's covered, he's not covered. And Stroud's the kind of guy that's like, oh, you're covered. I could still put it in a spot where you can get it and nobody else. So it's really a perfect marriage that way. And I think the way they play offensive football fits C.J. Stroud along with that. And like I said, the defensive talent I think is better than I gave it credit for. It fits the scheme. And I got to give them a lot of credit. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything else with their game. I think so. I hope Kenny Pickett's all right.
Yeah.
He got hurt on the 4th-and-1, right? That was a big moment.
What did Mike say? It's maybe like a minor MCL
sprain. They're hoping it's a minor
sprain.
MCL sprain, nothing major. We'll see where it goes. But that was 16-6 at that moment, and they were kind of on fringe field goal territory. They go for it on 4th-and-1. Nobody's open, and the Texans then went down the field, scored a touchdown, and kind of shut the door. Made it 23-6. Of course, now it's Mitch Trubisky back in the game, and it was never the same there. But, yeah, I think we kind of hit it on all of it. But it's a perfect example of good quarterback play, stay a little patient with the run, and we got the right players that fit the scheme we play, and all of a sudden we're better than we think, and we're a pain in the ass, and they're showing that once again. And then Jonathan Greener, 2 sacks, 2 off the edge again.
Yep.
We keep talking about those guys, him and Will Anderson. They pop every week.
So now Houston has won consecutive games for the first time since December of 2021. So it's been a while for them. They are 2-2 now. The Tennessee Titans,
yeah,
improved to 2-2. One of the more shocking results
Definitely.
Of the weekend. They host the Cincinnati Bengals and just destroy them. 27-3 was the final score. Let's start with the Bengals side of things here. Not Bucky Cox says to you, is this year's start for the Bengals different than the last few years, or are we expecting them to turn the corner soon? So we've seen this in the past, the Bengals slow starts, and then they get rolling, then they make a deep run to the playoffs. They're 1-3 right now. Is this looking different to you?
I don't know why I feel like I'm a little more worried than last year. Last year, they lost the first game against the Steelers. He threw 5 interceptions, right? They moved the ball up and down the field in the Steelers. So it was not the same. The Cowboys game, we know their defense was good, but it was like it wasn't like the whole game was like, they can't do anything. We're through 4 games here, really other than a half against the Rams. It's like, is this the worst offense in football? I mean, so that's where it's a little different. Yeah, I'm worried about it. I mean, you know I like Joe Burrow. I like Zach Taylor. I like everybody. I like everything about them. But, one, their defense has not been as good, okay? And I think that's probably a little bit because of the offenses. Like, you know, like we always talk about, every 4 plays they're on the field again, right? So the offense isn't sustaining drives. But I think it goes back to a lot of what we've been saying. The offense has to improve in every area. They can't protect Burrow. They can't run the ball. They're not creative in what they do with their schemes. You know that. I've said that repeatedly. I'm kind of sick of saying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all those things are a little bit of an issue. But you have Higgins and Chase and Burrow and Joe Mixon and Boyd, and you've had 2 games where you scored 3 points? Like, that's insane. That's insane. So, yeah, I'm a little concerned. And then on a game like today, which I think was equally as shocking, is break down the game. The game's 3-3. It's looking good. I mean, Tannehill hits 3 huge passes. five play 78 yard. This is the Tannehill and the Titans, the team where, like, I don't know, some weeks we're like, fuck, can they ever get a first down? And then all this, they're like, they're frustrating.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, the Chargers and the Bengals game, you're like, whoa, they look good. And then the other two games, you're like, what? They can't do anything.
Some people call them feeble at times.
Feeble,
yeah.
Right. They called the quarterback feeble. Can't Matt Ryan-ish. That. How dare you disrespect him like that, Ryan Tannehill. But, no, but then it, I think that's what scared me, too, was the explosive plays Tennessee was making on Cincinnati. Run game and pass game. So Cincinnati's in a funk, true funk. And I think this is going to be a little bit more work to get out of them, maybe what we saw the last 2 years. I'm a little more concerned, I think. I am.
They're at Arizona next. That ain't
going to be easy. No, Arizona, as we're seeing too, they're one of those teams, a little like the Texans, where the talent and the build of their roster makes sense for them. And, of course, they're well-coached. But, hey, Derrick Henry was great.
Yes, I was going to say, let's give some credit to the team that I mean, Mike
That's
Vrabel
right.
again here, yes. right? It's just like they figured out ways to do it. Yeah, Henry goes for 122 yards. Tajay Spears, their rookie out of Tulane, I believe, right? Looks
exactly.
like he might
You're
be
right.
a playmaker for a team
hey,
that desperately needs some playmaker.
Exactly.
Hopkins, a possession receiver, came through with some big first downs, too. And so, I mean, yeah, that was
an ass-whooping.
That was.
It was an ass-whooping. I mean, the last drive of the game was 15 plays, 65 yards. I was sitting in the control room. Producer Matt Casey's looking at me, and he's going, wait, have the Bengals had the ball this quarter? And I said, nope. The Titans are just going 2-3 yards at a time all the way down the field. 15 plays, 65-yard field goal drive. But, yeah, they dominated the line of scrimmage and – you know, this is one where I thought Tennessee would lose, of course. I'm not trying to say it. But I thought that they could maybe play them close because of the things we say. Like, Vrabel's going to know these coaches in Tennessee Titans defense are pretty good. And if you have too many telltale signs of predictability, they're going to be all over it. And they looked like they were all over it. And then poor Joe Burrow can't get 4 seconds to throw the ball right now either. And that's not acceptable either. I named all the receivers. They got a $16 million left tackle, a first-round right tackle. They spent a lot of money on their interior three offensive linemen. It's bad across the board, and they're going to have to go back to the drawing board here and fix it.
Yeah, Joe Burrow sacked 3 times. He was hit 9 times in the game. Doesn't look completely healthy. We know
no.
the lower
well,
body.
He can't run and make magic plays happen.
And then he was, like, massaging his, like, biceps over
he
on the sideline.
He
was
killed
like, oh,
a few
no.
times as he was throwing the ball. Like, the kind of hits where you went, like, ooh, I hope his elbow's okay, right, as he was throwing, like, Brock Purdy-ish in the NFC Championship game. But, yeah, the sacks don't even tell the story in that game. It's like you said, it's the pressures and the hits. They were all yep. over Burrow. And then, yes, Burrow's inability to move or want to extend plays because of his calf is certainly taking a few, you know, magical plays away from their offense as well.
So we got a win for the Titans. We got a win for the Texans. We got a win for the Jaguars in the AFC South. The only team that lost from that division, the Colts, and they went to overtime against the Rams, who have a superstar. They just breed superstar receivers over there. John Scott says to you, Puka Nacua is a monster. 9 for 163 and the game winner, Nacua Matata. Nacua Matata. So now he has 39 receptions, 501 yards this season, the most ever by a player in his first 4 career games. Only Justin Jefferson has more yards this season of any receiver.
They found their new Cooper Kupp.
I know.
That's what it is.
And they still have the old Cooper Kupp who can come
back. I know.
Back
when
at
he
point,
comes
right?
back, I mean, yeah. You know, he's not like you put him outside and you go, if he's one-on-one, we're just going to torch him, right? He's got size. He's faster than his 40 time and things like that. And then he's a great route runner. He can do all the Cooper Kupp things where they tell him to read the coverages on the fly, and he goes, oh, I got to cut this way on this coverage or this way on that coverage. He's all over from that aspect. And then because of his size and everything else, he's fearless catching the ball over the middle. So, like, around people around him, contact, anything like that, it's nothing to him.
How did we miss him?
Well,
we should have been the podcast.
I know.
Puka Nacua draft podcast.
Well, somebody asked me today, and I was like, he was definitely, like, top 15 receiver in the draft, right? One of those. But
would
you know,
he be doing this elsewhere?
Well, this is where this is the good question. This is the good question. This is where player meets system fit, meets right coach and quarterback and all of that, right? Again, I'm not ready to sit here and go, this guy's just like Justin Jefferson. No, this is a little different than that, right? Jefferson was the guy you could go, line up out here, and if they play you man, we're just going to tell you to run straight, and you'll beat them, and we'll throw a touchdown. Hey, it's not quite that, right? But, no, this was the perfect place for him. And, you know, BYU, they're kind of coached the right way on the offensive side of the ball. He obviously has an understanding there. And then when you have McVay and Stafford continues to play unbelievable football while getting hit like Joe Burrow, basically, except they just give him a few more answers to throw the ball quickly and help him out. And it just, I'm amazed by them. I really am. The toughness of them, you know, coming out the way they did today, jumping out in the Colts. I give the Colts a lot of credit for hanging in there and then coming back and making it an unbelievable game. I mean, Anthony Richardson, he showed again. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with. But, yeah, the Rams are they're tough on both sides of the ball. They're just not super talented, and they stay in a lot of games that sometimes you feel like they shouldn't even stay in.
They're young. They're hungry. They got some superstars with Aaron Donald and a good quarter. Like, they're not going to be a fun team to play for anyone this year. I feel like this is going to be like, ugh.
No, you're exactly right.
We're supposed to win this game. We're supposed to win this game. It's not going to be fun.
Their defense is really well coached, and we still got to block Aaron Donald, and they're creative on that side of the ball. The Colts dug themselves into a hole that was just a little too much, right? You know, hot hand to the Rams offense early and Stafford and all of that. Anthony Richardson had the fumble early on in the football game, right? And I can't remember what that led to. I want to say that led to a field goal, if I remember correctly there, in one of those drives. But then, again, the way he battled back, they're different because of his threat to run. It opens up their normal run game. And then he made some pat throws, you know, in some big moments there when they were down 23-0 that were, you know, had all of us in the back room going, piss missile, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's got it all going. It's not refined and polished yet like we talked about, but the talent is real, and it's pretty apparent.
The Colts fall to 2-2. Every team in this division, the AFC South, is now 2-2. Everyone's tied for first. Everyone's tied for last 4 weeks in to the season. Just finished. Chiefs do beat the Jets. 23-20 was the final score. You mentioned it was the worst game that you've seen from Patrick Mahomes in a while.
Yeah, it was.
Third career game with multiple interceptions and one or fewer touchdowns. First time since the Super Bowl versus the Bucks.
Yeah, two bad interceptions, right? Bad ones where you were like, he tried to throw like the perfect touch pass over defenders and threw them like 5 and 6 yards too short. But you know, they had a chance, typical Chiefs, to kind of jump on them, put them in a spot where you're like, oh, they're in deep trouble. They get backed up. Like I said, I don't believe that was a safety. The face mask penalty happened on the 1 yard line. It should have been, you know, ball in the one for the Chiefs. That was a big moment. Jets go get a good old gutsy, like, field goal drive right there. And then from that point on, it kind of like ignited them. And Zach Wilson played really damn good. They got the running game going a little bit. But I think the big thing is like, you know, yeah, I think maybe we saw the Jets and the offense maybe the start of something here. I know they didn't win this football game, and they're not going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, this is a, you know, a damn good battle-tested team in the Chiefs for sure. But it's like they took the training wheels off Zach Wilson in this game finally. And they gave him a chance. You know, not to say I'm sitting here defending Zach Wilson, but we've said in the last few weeks it's been like, you know, they can't protect. They can't run the ball. They run the ball on first. They run the ball on second. They're like, hey, it's 3rd and 12 now. Can you throw the ball for us and get a first down? What? You couldn't get a first down against 9 people dropping into coverage when everybody knew you were going to throw the ball at 3rd and 11? I mean, that's how, like, the Jets fans have acted lately. They put him in some positions on 1st and 2nd down to be aggressive in this game.
Yeah.
And he made some really good throws and brought him back into this football game. And, you know, the Chiefs are tough to close out. And they made a few plays here down the stretch that I think the Jets fans are probably going to be pissed about. And Isaiah Pacheco started running the ball a little bit. But, yeah, I think it's something you can build on if you're the Jets, that's for sure.
It'll be interesting if Aaron Rodgers is hanging around the facility a little bit
more. Needs to be there.
Like, what that's going to do.
Yep. They got to keep the positive vibes going. They need a guy like him in they need a guy like him walking around the building to just scare some of the young players straight. That's what my big thing is. So, you know, a receiver or Breece Hall doesn't have the idea, I'm not happy, and now I'm going to go say something to the microphone here. Like, when you got a guy like Aaron Rodgers, or I had guys like, you know, Derek Brooks or Rondae Barber, like, Yeah, I knew what I should and shouldn't say in front of a microphone, but I also knew, like, I better not say anything like that because I don't want to piss. Those guys are going to come to me and be like, hey, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, shut up, right? And that's where the veteran stars help your football team. They keep everybody in check in the locker room. Nobody wants to disappoint them, and they show you how things should be done.
You know, like that scrum in the locker room where you have all the cameras set up? Like, Aaron's just going to stand behind it and look at, at the rookies.
I am here.
Second-year guy is answering and like shaking his head no whenever they go down a path that they should not be going down. All right, time now. Forgive me the headlines presented by Hyundai. We're in the newspaper shop, the printing press. We're about to go to press. We got to go to press here pretty early if we're going to get this newspaper on the doorstep.
We got to get it out.
So let's start with the 49ers beat the Cardinals. Final score in this one was 35-16. Your headline for this one is
perfect,
almost perfect for Brock
Purdy.
It was pretty good again. Christian McCaffrey was better than pretty good.
Christian McCaffrey through 4 weeks through the month of September has a chance to be the NFL MVP. Now, it's the I said it last week. I said it to Dan Patrick. He goes, who's the first month MVP? I said Tua and Christian McCaffrey. Like, the award itself has become way too much of a quarterback award here. But we're talking about arguably the best team in football.
Yeah.
He is the focal point of their offense.
Yes.
They run the ball with him every play. They try to throw him the ball every play.
And he will get more credit than Brock Purdy, I think.
I think so, too. But where they're dangerous is they can run the ball like that, and then Brock Purdy can carve you up like that. It's kind of like pick your poison.
He was 20 of 21 for 283 yards, but VK does say, yes, damn okay, Christian McCaffrey, that's it. That's the tweet. VK, someone we work with here at NBC, he was awesome. But, yeah, I mean, 20 of 21 for Brock Purdy. It's just for those that maybe thought what we saw last year was an aberration, it's not going to continue. There's no way it can continue for the last pick in the draft. It's continued.
It may be the theme of the podcast here, right? Just people who fit the system or place they're in, like we kind of just talked about with a few other people. Talked about with the Texans, right? The personnel makes sense there, right? There was another team we just talked about a minute ago that also was along those lines that I can't remember exactly anymore, but it's getting late. Either way, yeah. He's smart, he's got a good arm, he's got great feel in the pocket, and most importantly, he listens to what Kyle Shanahan says. And when you listen to him, you got a chance. But they were phenomenal today. I mean, I'm sitting in my notes and just going, McCaffrey, Purdy, killing it. McCaffrey, Purdy, Ayuk, killing it. I mean, hey, the Cardinals, I'll give them credit. They battled back, made this a football game.
They converted a lot of third downs.
Oh, my gosh,
did they? What did they
end up with? 8 for 15.
8 of 15, yeah, 53%. Yeah. So just like every time, they were like moving the chains. And I think they're going to be much like the Houston Texans and the Rams. It's like these teams that people don't expect to be there. You're supposed to beat them. It's just like, dang, that was tough. That was harder than it should have been.
They're well-coached on defense without a lot of great talent. Okay, offensively, they're also well-coached. They stay patient with the run. They're not a great running team, but they're a good running team. And then when you talk about Michael Wilson, Hollywood Brown, all right, and, you know, Zach Ertz at tight end and stuff, you start to go, damn, they got some weapons there, you know, and they didn't have Rondell Moore today, or he did play, I think, I'm seeing here, but I didn't see him do anything. So they got some guys that can scare you for sure. That's the big thing. But, hey, the game's 21-10. The 49ers get the ball in the third quarter, and you go, oh, here they go. They're going to move down the field. The Cardinals make a good stop them like they're on fringe field goal territory. Shanahan does the right thing, doesn't kick the long field goal. They punt it. They get at their own one-yard line. You're like, oh, man, the Cardinals are on their own one. This is going to be punt the ball back. The 49ers are going to get the ball at the 45-yard line. They're going to score, and the game's going to be over. They go on an incredible 99-yard touchdown drive. I mean, incredible. You know, mainly with what it seemed like was big passes from Dobbs. You know, one, I think, was to Michael Wilson, the rookie from Stanford, and another one to Hollywood Brown.
Michael Wilson.
I know, right? Michael Wilson's real. He is. He popped last week against Dallas, too. But so you think, oh, whoa, we got a game here. But 49ers get the ball back and just reassert their dominance right away, go right down the field, score. They're a machine right now. They really are. And when he has a weapon that he starts to, and I mean he as in Shanahan, that makes you start to, oh, we got a game plan for him here, and we got a game plan for him there. It's just going to be trouble for teams because they're going to start going, we got to double him here. And now you're going to go, well, now Debo's like this or Ayuk's like this.
And yeah.
That's where it becomes an issue.
Can we talk about Ayuk just for a second here, too? And Pete, I don't know if you can pull up the dots that you have here on the 42-yard pass to Brandon Ayuk. There's been a lot of talk for a while in San Francisco that he could be a legit number one.
Yeah. Right?
We haven't seen it. It's been more potential than actual results on the field. He goes 6 catches, 148 yards in this one. What have you seen? And here's the play with the dots. What have you seen from Ayuk and Purdy's connection with him?
This was a risky decision, but it was like the proper throw here because you see there's two secondary players back there. He kind of stops Ayuk in front of the defenders to let him go up and get the ball. But I think your question about Ayuk is the debate, and I think the debate they're going to be stuck in. I think he's an awesome number two, maybe a 1A-ish, right? Right? You're certainly glad to have him on our football team. What I wonder with them is, can they pay him? Mm. You know, they're paying Kittle. They're paying McCaffrey. They're paying Debo Samuel. They're paying Trent Williams.
They're paying Bosa.
I mean, when I say they're paying these people, they're like, McCaffrey's the highest paid guy.
Yeah.
Trent Williams is the highest paid guy.
I know.
Nick Bosa is the highest paid guy.
I think they're cheating with the salary cap. I don't know how they're doing that.
And they're going to have the most salary cap room going into next year.
The math doesn't check out.
They've done smart and got ahead of these things, I think, and balanced it the right way there. But Ayuk is really damn good. I guess I'd like to see more before I'd say he's a bona fide number one. What I really look at him as an awesome number two. And I don't mean to be disrespectful that way, but that's kind of just how I look at him.
Purdy's pass right there traveled 46.8 yards through the air, his longest completed pass by air distance.
It
of
was
his career.
That was his career, huh?
It's been a pretty short
career. Yeah, I know. They're so explosive. He had that throw. He had another deep in cut to Ayuk that was really impressive, where he kind of rolled out and Ayuk was running the other way. And then, they find McCaffrey a little bit like how the Chiefs are. They send these weapons downfield, and then McCaffrey works the underneath coverage, and it's just a mismatch against linebackers, and that's where they're going to be tough going forward. It's going to be tough with them in Dallas this week. Ooh, man, Dallas is going to have their work cut out stopping that offense.
Speaking of the Cowboys, perfect transition. They do defeat the Patriots, and not just defeat them, they crush them. 38-3 was the final score. Your headline for this game is?
It's Kill Bill.
Oh, God.
Bill's dead. Bill Belichick is dead. He's been killed. In the figurative coaching terms, he's never had his butt whooped like he did this Sunday.
And Bill O'Brien's offense, too. But, worst loss of Bill Belichick's career. His previous worst was 31-0, that loss to the Bills in week one of the 2003 season, if you can remember that one. That was a.k.a. the Lawyer Malloy game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do remember that game. Yeah.
And so
Drew Bledsoe was the quarterback of the Bills.
How did this happen? Because like watching it, it's not like the Cowboys offense was awesome. Like,
no.
They stalled out a few times too. Actually, they couldn't punch the ball in the end zone.
No, I mean it could have been worse.
Right?
They kind of came out early though. The pass game was good. Yeah. It was effective. Like Dak made some big plays to Gallup, Ferguson, CeeDee Lamb. The big thing of the game is, yes, their offense and the pass game look good for Dallas, but the bottom line is the fucking Cowboys defense scored 2 touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to win that way, right? And a strip sack by Mac, who, gets outside the pocket. But, hey, you're not that fast. You got to look around. You got to check to make sure people aren't right on your heels because since you're not fast and other guys are faster, they're going to gain ground on you. Strip sack, fumble, touchdown. Good play by Dante Fowler. But then, here we are, and maybe we could get something going before the half, and right? And they're kind of moving the ball. And then he thinks he's Josh Allen or Mahomes, and he's going to throw the ball all the way across the field,
which he did earlier in the game, and it was complete.
I think it was earlier that drive.
Which is like people are like, why do they do that? I was like, well, because probably it works sometimes.
It works sometimes, and sometimes the coverage can be so moved over to a side. You see a guy, and you go, wow, right? But here's a big moment. It's 21-3. You need something positive to go into the halftime, and this was not one where the whole team was over to one side. It was like, wait, you look back. there's a guy there. Yeah, he's a few yards downfield, and you got to make like a 30-yard throw that's only 6 yards down the field. And undercut by Deron Bland, who's going to be playing a lot more now because Trayvon Diggs got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
And he showed up, and that was night night, and that was all she wrote there in Dallas.
It's one of those games where if you're a supporter of Mac Jones, you feel like the coaching has failed him, and if you're not a supporter of Mac Jones, you feel like he has failed the coaching, and I feel like that's the case with any player. It's funny hearing people evaluate the quarterback and the coaching. It depends on if you like the guy or not. It's like Justin Fields, if you like him, the Bears have let him down, but that's a topic for another
day. You're right about that.
But Micah Parsons was terrorizing him and the entire offensive line. He generated 9 pressures in the Cowboys' win. This is according to Next Gen Stats. His 8th consecutive game with 5 or more pressures.
That's insane.
He leads the NFL in nearly every pass rushing metric this season. So that makes life difficult on any quarterback.
Yeah, there's too much on Mac Jones right now. First off, he's not Mahomes or Josh Allen or some superstar like that. He needs system help. And then we know they're not super talented at receiver, right? So they don't scare people that way. So what's the other thing they need? They need a fucking running game. And other than the Jets game last week, that's the only game they've been able to run the ball at all, really. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense with how they're playing right now. Or it's not sustainable to think, ooh, they're going to be some great offensive machine here with like, oh, yeah, we're going to drop back and throw it 45 times a game with Mac Jones, and that's how we're going to win football games? No, there's no way. That's just not going to. It's 42 attempts against the Miami Dolphins, okay? I just want to go through this real quick because I think people need to hear it. You play the Eagles, they threw the ball 54 times, couldn't run the ball then. Last week, like I said, against the Jets, it was a little bit better, right? I know Zeke had a decent day. I'm trying to pull it up, and I'm choking under the pressure here. No. Where the hell is that damn game? There it is. Nope. Okay? But so last week they win. They ran the ball. They were balanced. They threw it 29 times. And now here they were back today to we can't run the ball, and we got to put it on Dak's hand. And it's not like they – I mean, Mac's hands.
Yeah.
And it's not like they got game-breaking receivers to play that style of football.
They didn't get to run many plays at all in this game. They just were –
they were
short
obliterated
drives
there.
So not good, but a good game coming up between the Cowboys and the 49ers. We got a good
Dak
one.
Dak was great. Dak's going to have to be like he was today to beat the 49ers. I'm interested to see this Cowboys defense and what they can do to kind of slow down this 49ers offense that, you know, is maybe functioning as a high level than anybody else in the game right now.
That was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. So a quick preview of maybe two of the best teams in the NFL, maybe the two best, to a game of perhaps the two worst teams in the NFL, the Denver Broncos and the Chicago Bears. The Broncos come back, a fierce comeback. Look, in all honesty, like, good on them for a team that gave up 70 last week and then finds themselves down significantly to the Chicago Bears, getting it together and coming back and winning this game. They trailed 28-7 late in the third quarter. I think we have a graphic that shows the Bears' defensive splits, basically week 4 versus Denver. So first half, they gave up 120 yards. Second half, 191. It was a tale of two halves for both teams in this one.
It was.
What was your big takeaway? Was it credit to the Broncos for the comeback or bad on the Bears for wasting maybe Justin Fields' best game as a pro?
It's tough, right? The Bears made some big mistakes at the end. One, Fields getting strip sacked, right? And then returning it for a 35-yard touchdown. They were up by 7 points, okay? So that was a big moment. They get down. They're in field goal territory. It's 28-28. Put the fucking pressure on Russell Wilson and Sean Payton, who have choked their ass off the first 3 weeks. They go for it on 4th-and-1. And I believe, did they do the push too? They might have been another team that got stopped on the Jalen Hurts quarterback sneak play there. I think that's what it was. I got so many plays in my head right now because I know Mac Jones got stopped by it. We talked about it. But I can't remember. They ran it up the middle. I'm wrong. Okay.
Right.
But either way, they don't get it, right, which I don't like. Kick the field goal. Put the pressure on Wilson and them. Make them go down and tie the football game, kick a field goal to tie the football game, or score a touchdown and win. All right, I didn't love that. But I think the big thing would be, you know, the first half was insane. Like, it was laughable. The Bears offense was doing whatever it wanted, running the ball. And, I mean, Justin Fields was throwing the ball well, but there was a number of throws where you were like, there's nobody in the screen for the Broncos. Like, where is everybody? Cole Kmet wide open. You know, DJ Moore wide open. I mean, it was pretty incredible. And you were like, between last – Justin Fields was 16 for 16 at one point in this football game.
Dang.
And that was last week, what did Tua start the game at? Like 15 for 16? So the Broncos got some issues there. Now, what they did in the second half, I don't quite know. Other than that, they started to make stops, and Russell and company caught fire throwing the football. And they started to make some big plays, whether it was to Sutton or Marvin Mims once again. Jerry Jeudy popped up once or twice for sure, right? And they started to put it together. But I think between their efficiency, and then you get a fumble return for a touchdown, and you get a fourth and one stop, and then Justin Fields throws the late interception. Those were big parts of the football game. I don't feel any better about the Broncos.
Yeah.
I don't. Their defense has some serious issues, obviously, and people are figuring out what they're doing there. But, yeah, that was rough on the Bears where it was Justin Fields' best game. I've never seen him throw the ball better than what I saw him throw today.
Yeah, 335 yards, four touchdowns. That one late interception sealing the deal. If the season ended today, which it doesn't, but if it did, the Bears would have the top two picks in the 2024 NFL Draft.
Ooh, it's top two picks.
Yeah, they'd go quarterback, quarterback.
You're funny.
And then trade one of those. Or two of them, I guess.
Well, they're going to need them. They definitely need some talent infused into their roster, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I think they could use some players there for sure. But, yeah, Fields, the run game, that all got going today. That was exciting. I give the Broncos credit. You know, in the second half for battle back, I am going to be excited to kind of see what they did on the defensive side of the ball, because we had the one drive by the Bears in the second half,
okay,
and that was really it for the rest. And there obviously was some drastic changes made by that Broncos defense.
Maybe we take a closer look at that game, because
so.
There might not be a whole lot of opportunities to take a closer look at the Broncos and Bears as the season goes on. One more game to talk about from Sunday.
Well, one other thing.
Oh.
Russell Wilson, 1-3, right?
Yeah.
He's like, you look at him for the year, it's 9 touchdowns, it's 2 interceptions, right?
He's fixed.
The stats are, he's at least going in the right trajectory.
Yeah.
Now, he has played some of his worst moments of the year in the biggest moments, so that's where that you like it to translate to wins here. But I do think, like, if we got to give them a little credit for it's going in the right direction for Russell Wilson and company. I will say that.
If he keeps doing this, he might get his own office back, right? Like, get him back in that
funny
office. He's earned it. Vikings beat the Panthers 21-13. I don't have a great feel for this game necessarily.
No. They drove down the field, the Vikings early, and Cousins threw a 100-yard pick six. He threw the ball late to the
Franklin
left side.
Yes.
And, I mean, it was way late. And, of course, you know, late to the sidelines usually means bad things. That was a pick six.
Yeah, they were down. Vikings were down 13-7 going into the second half.
Yeah, so they went pick six, 7-0. Long, ugly drive by the Panthers to make it 10-0. Vikings answered back with a tough TD drive to make it 10-7, right? And then the Vikings, as we know, have the disease of turnovers. Before the half, they were kind of driving again. And Cousins got hit and strip sacked. The ball flew up in the air, so they lost the ball there. And then I think what am I missing here? That was where he got hit and the ball popped up in the air and got intercepted. He didn't get strip sacked. It was his second interception of the day. He got hit as he was throwing the ball, got intercepted. But here's the big thing of the day.
Okay.
Well, the Panthers' defense is pretty legit. We knew that. They gave Vikings offense struggles. The game's 13-7. All right, and the Panthers are in field goal range, right? And this is where Bryce Young fumbles, right? Harrison Smith kind of hits him.
Yeah, who is he? He was active.
He was active. He was, and then one of them picks it up for a 51-yard touchdown return, and the game was never really the same after that. It was never the same. The Panthers got the ball back. They went like 3 and out, I want to say, and the Vikings got the short field, and he threw a long touchdown pass to Justin Jefferson, and it was 21-13, and that was kind of the game until the very end, to where Bryce Young and company got down close to have a chance to maybe throw it in the end zone to tie the football game, and that's where Harrison Smith came again to sack it, get another sack, and close the game out.
At EM27, hey, Chris and Ahmed, love the pod. What do you think about Bryce Young and the lack of explosives on offense so far? Seems like a lot of dink and dunk, and the best full field drive of the game being a 15-play, 61-yard drive for a field goal.
Yeah, that's what worries me about them. You know, that's been my thought on them a little bit, you know, all along at EM27, is that there isn't enough explosive playmakers on that side of the ball. And then I think when you add that on to they're trying to get the ball out of Bryce Young's hand pretty quickly. They don't want him to hold the ball and take big hits and do stuff like that. So it's a little bit of like both things working against them. He had some moments today where I went, ooh, nice throw, nice slide in the pocket, sidearm throw, whatever there. But, yeah, there's no guys on their team where you go, he can throw a 10-yard in-cut and the guy might break a tackle and run for a 60-yard touchdown. And then they don't have the run game working like they did last year either.
No.
Right? Remember, at the end of the year last year, they were a force run the football.
2.7 yards per carry.
Yeah, so they can't get it going there. And, of course, then you don't have weapons to stress it out on the, you know, passing game.
Yeah.
It's hard to get the run game going, you know, off of that because of that.
Lack of an explosive running game and not many weapons and didn't have a whole lot of time all the time and
right.
still completed 78% of his passes.
Yeah, no, if you give him time, he will pick you apart. The big thing with him will be, can he stand in the pocket, take hits, and make big throws down the field? That's what we're going to continue to watch with Bryce Young. Everything else I know he can do. But that's a big part of the football game that helps you win big games as you go on later in your career. If you want to get to a NFC championship or win playoff games, it's going to be some of those type of plays that we haven't seen a lot of from him yet, and hopefully he gets there.
That closes the segment of Winless No More. Broncos get their first win of the year. Vikings get their first win of the year. We don't want to forget Thursday.
How could we forget?
My Lions did again.
How could we forget?
The big butts dominating for the Lions against the Green Bay Packers up front, who did have some injuries on that offensive line, but the Lions took advantage of it.
It goes back to what we said right in week one when we talked about the Chiefs-Lions game. There's no team that's going to outclass that Lions offensive line or defensive line on either side. You're not just going to dominate them. I mean, you might win the battle that day, but you're not going to dominate them. I mean, Goff answering back the way he did after throwing the interception, that was an ass-whooping.
It
I mean,
really
the Green
was.
Bay had no answers on the offensive side of the ball.
Yes.
And Jordan Love definitely looked the worst he's looked so far. With just some awkward throws, decisions, throws where you're like, wait, why did he throw it like that? Like, why did he just flip it sidearm and let the guy try to run? He was wide open. Just hit him. There was definitely some questionable things that went on in this football game.
Yeah, you're right. The Lions dominated the line of scrimmage. 211 yards
they did.
Rushing for them, and they only gave up 27. And like defensively, I was a little worried after that Seattle game because I was like, ah, dang it.
Yeah.
That defense looks kind of like it did last year. They're going to have to just outscore teams. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that all the time. But this is 2 weeks in a row now.
Yeah.
Where they have looked really strong. Brian Branch looks
right.
awesome. In
oh,
the
I hope he's okay too.
I think he is. He's scared. He's doing this every week now. I think he gets a cramp down at the like his Achilles area.
Something. It was scary.
Freaks us all out. I wish he would stop.
Aiden
doing that.
Hutchinson looked awesome.
Yes.
Jared Goff is fearless. That's where I give them a lot of credit. And your defenses, they're way better than last year. I'm hitting here to tell you that. They're way better. They are. Even in that Seahawks game, we know they got talent.
Yeah.
But let's not forget, Jared Goff threw a pick six. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown fumbled like the very next series that gave the Seahawks another short field. It was a little misleading. You're definitely better in that area. You're a legit NFC contender, like legit. Right, I'm not ready to put you in the class of like the 49ers and the Eagles and the Cowboys yet, but I think you're fourth. I think you're next. I'd take you over the Seahawks right now, if that means anything.
Here's their question, though.
Yeah.
Would you take the Seahawks over the Giants? Because that's the Monday Night Football game. Pete will be at this game.
Yep.
And Pete says, he notes here, he is not emotionally prepared for a loss, so he cannot handle a loss.
Wow.
Chris, will he be in
life
shambles?
Life isn't always fair.
Will he be in shambles come Tuesday morning?
Well, you know, it depends on if it's just a loss. Is he going to be in shambles? Because they're going to lose. So the Seahawks are going to beat the Giants.
Yeah, if they keep it close, will you be okay? They need to win.
He says they need to win.
Well,
then he'll probably be an emotional mess on Tuesday morning.
Take the day off Wednesday.
Yep. Don't show up here. Don't bring your bad vibes here, Pete. All right? No. But I do. Listen, this is a big game for the Giants.
Yes.
They had, a long week because they last played on Thursday night. They should be as prepared and as rested as they can be. But, yeah, you fall to 1-3, you could be in deep trouble here as far as being you know, out of the playoff race before the halfway part of the season.
Then they're at Miami. Then they're at Buffalo.
So that kind of says it's a kind of a must-win football game for them tomorrow night if they want to legitimately, like, think they're a playoff football team this year. No doubt about it. And I don't expect them to win. I don't. I think it's blitzing, playing man-to-man against Geno and these guys, I think is scary. And I think the Seahawks on defense are the type of team that are like, screw them running and these five-yard over-the-middle passes and the bootlegs. They're going to be ultra-aggressive and call the Giants bluff there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the Seahawks win by a touchdown, somewhere like that.
Morgan, you will be producing on Wednesday. We won't see Pete until next Sunday. He will be off. He'll be crying, sobbing into his Giants gear.
We did it.
We actually did it.
We did it.
I like that we say that like we're surprised.
I'm surprised. It's almost midnight, and I'm still thinking coherently. Okay, yeah. So I am surprised.
I was in Iowa City earlier today.
This is crazy. It is crazy. It is crazy. You want to get up and do the show with me tomorrow?
I'd rather not.
Yeah, screw you then. Good friend you are. Jeez.
I'll turn on the last half hour.
All right. Well, let me know if you go to sleep after your 200 milligrams of caffeine cherry flush crap you just drank. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let us all know. We'd all like to know that. Your poor wife's going to be like, why can't you go to sleep? Why won't you stop moving in bed? And you're going to be like, well, I drank one of those stupid energy drinks, and I can't get relaxed.
And then I had to deal with Chris, and she's like, that does make sense.
All right, you know where to find us, all right? It's been a long day. I hope you enjoyed the Week 4 podcast. I think we hit it all. Subscribe, rate, review. You know we'll be back here. We'll be back Wednesday to break down more of the NFL, give you a little deeper dive into what was going on in the league and some of the X's and O's. Ahmed, I always appreciate you being here to drive the ship. Everybody be good out there. Be safe. Enjoy the Monday night game, Seahawks and Giants. We'll see you Wednesday. Peace out. Clap it up.